Hello, are you ready to conceive, carry, and deliver a healthy baby? Welcome to the podcast devoted to all topics related to fertility. And I'm your host, Inna Duckworth. I am a natural fertility expert. And today we've got a special guest, Kate Waters. I'd like Kate to introduce herself. Kate, please introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Inna. So I'm Kate Waters. I'm a nutritional therapist and I'm also a chef as well. So I qualified as a nutritional therapist in 2014, so around about 8 years ago. I now specialize in intimate female health. So bladders, vaginas, vulvas, all of that sort of area. And so although I'm not actually a fertility specialist myself, obviously you need a vagina to get pregnant. So I actually do get quite a few clients that come to me looking for support with their bladder or vagina health who are on their fertility journey as well. So I have a huge interest in it. And before I specialized in intimate health, I actually, my love and fascination was in fertility. I just didn't quite go down that path. So before I was a nutritional therapist, though, I was a chef for around about 20 years, and I now teach online cooking programs with my business partner who is in America. And that's a little bit about me.
Well, that's amazing introduction, and it's never late to start working in fertility, because I know that you see quite a lot of clients who end up asking for your support for fertility. But the question I wanted to ask you is, it looks like you see a lot of clients with chronic issues. Why do you think this is the case? What's the behind it?
So it's a tricky one. I do seem to get the clients who are slightly at the end of the road. They have seen a lot of other specialists. They've seen a lot of doctors, and they're not getting answers as to what their problem is. For some people, you know, you get a UTI, the antibiotics sort it, and you carry on with your life. I get the ones where the antibiotics are not working. I get the ones where they've been given fluconazole or over-the-counter canistan for their thrush for years and years and years, and it sort of kept it at bay, and it's got worse and worse and worse. Or the ones who have been seeing, you know, they're actually seeing specialists for sort of vulva or vaginal care. One lady I spoke to has been seeing that this has been going on and off for about 30 years, and they're just not getting any answers. They cannot work out what is wrong. And so I seem to draw this crowd. Why that is happening? I think the testing that is used is sometimes a little bit out of date. We have a lot of new testing that is looking more at the DNA rather than a swab culture base that we have at the moment, where they try to grow the bacteria in a petri dish in an environment that almost forces the bacteria to grow. It's the perfect environment for the bacteria to grow, and it doesn't give you a true picture of what's happening. We now have these tests that look at the DNA. There's several different ones out on the market, but they are expensive, and the NHS doesn't either have the training for that or the funds to go down that functional medicine route, which is where we step in as holistic and functional practitioners. I think there's also an element of looking at the body as a whole. You know, it is not just about killing off one microbe or trying to destroy something that is causing the problem. Yes, we probably want to bring that down, but we also need to look at restoring and repairing the environment, looking at the terrain, the ground, if you like, of what these microbes grow in, the immune system. What is happening with the immune system? Why is it not able to fight off, probably the wrong word, but to retain the balance? You know, we should be able to live with these microbes. We shouldn't have these overgrowths. Our body should be able to maintain some sort of homeostatic balance, but for some reason it's not. And that can be for lots and lots of different reasons. It could be the immune system. It could be hormones that are at play. It can be dietary wise as well, you know, that you're not getting the right nutrients in to support all the functions of the body. It can be environmental, so the impact of soaps, sanitary products, sex itself, that unfortunately a beautiful and amazing act can actually sometimes the impact of the seminal pH it's actually quite alkaline compared to our acidic vagina, and therefore that can have an impact as well. The general impact of intimacy, of sex itself, can be an impact. Saliva, all of these things can actually have an impact on our microbiome. And if we're not addressing all of these lifestyle components, along with diet, along with looking at the nervous system, and even, you know, I'm starting to try to understand trauma and how trauma can impact us, where we bury our emotions in our body and hold them without realizing sometimes, I think women are particularly good at this, although men do it as well. We quite often may hold them in part of our body, like our bladder or our womb area, or the impact of that has on health and disease as well. So there's a huge sort of aspect all around it of why I end up seeing so many of these chronic conditions. A lot of the time it is over treatment. A small thing has been turned into quite a large thing because of over treatment, because they're not looking at restoring balance. It's much more about trying to kill stuff off. And that has led to killing off all the beneficial microbes in that space as well.
Yes, exactly. I'm just admiring what you're saying, because that's so much probably like what I feel about it. And the idea of growing bacteria and creating this homeostasis, I think, is vital for fertility. Would you like to touch a little bit upon the bacteria needed for a healthy vagina, if you like, for fertility? Mm-hmm. What bacteria is that, and like, what are we doing about it holistically?
Yeah, sure. So the research all points towards the most beneficial as being lactobacilli, and there's several different strains of lactobacilli. And then we have these community subtypes, which are people's specific types of lactobacilli that they have, or their range of bacteria that they have. There's five different ones, and they now have subgroups with them as well. So, you know, we are constantly learning in this space. It is an ever evolving field. Unfortunately, most of the science for many, many years has been tested on and studied on men. And finally, we're starting to look at women and actually realize that women's bodies are completely different to male bodies, and we cannot make the same assumptions. So I'm trying to think when it was. It wasn't long ago, like maybe 17 years ago, that they realized that the bladder is actually not sterile, that there is bacteria there. I may have the time frame slightly wrong there, but it's around about, say, 17 odd years ago. And it's only in about 30 odd years that we've actually realized that the vaginal microbiome has a huge impact on fertility and on women's health in general. So these lactobacilli strains, of which there are several, most of the research seems to point towards Lactobacillus crispatus as being one of the most beneficial, and that's because of the lactic acid that it creates, but also which helps to create the pH, the acidic environment that we want the vagina to be in. But also all of these, most of these lactobacilli also create hydrogen peroxide, which again adds to this acidic environment that we are looking for. But, you know, it's interesting because I have seen people who do not have good Lactobacillus crispatus levels manage to get pregnant and manage to hold on to their pregnancy full term. So there is always this balance of, but what is your community subtype? What is your bacterial lactobacilli environment? And because that is potentially your state of health. And it's very important that although we have this amazing research that's coming through, that we always take it back to the individual and what is going on for that individual and what is their homeostatic level, what is their baseline, and working from that, rather than presuming that everybody must have this high amount of one specific microbe to actually maintain and hold health and therefore fertility as well.
You see, that's exactly what I was thinking as well, that people, mainly women, do not know about the community state types. And one of the state types is actually not rich in lactobacilli. And I think it's linked with that sort of genetically, this type of cultures were not eating a lot of dairy, maybe, or some other types of products. And it's really important to know what is your state and your type. However, I wanted to move a little bit from sort of vaginal bacteria, vaginal microbiome to general gut microbiome, how do you, like, do you find links between the gut problems and the vaginal problems, or the gut problems and the blood problems, and sort of a little bit skewed to fertility?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, let's just remember that the gut is the seat of all our health. 65 to 70% of our immune system resides in our gut. So having a healthy gut is incredibly important. I would say around about 90% of the intimate health clients that I see are either right now, well, maybe not right now, but when they come to see me, suffering from constipation or have suffered from severe constipation at some point in their lifetime. And by constipation, I do mean not passing a stool regularly or not passing a stool fully. So perhaps going 2 to 3 times a day, but always passing pellets, you know, sort of rabbit dropping type stool. And this is not the sign of a healthy gut. Now, again, this may just be their normal, or they may say it's always been their normal, but it's amazing once you start to work on the gut microbiome, looking at fiber intake, looking at peristalsis movement, that actually you can improve this. And with that improvement, you do tend to see improvements across the range. We also have to remember that the bladder, the vagina, and the gut, or the colon, sorry, are all in very, very close proximity. And if there is stool being retained for a longer period of time than it should be, or there is slow peristalsis, so that is the movement of the gut moving the stool through, that may be pushing on the vaginal cavity or onto the, and then again, sort of, you know, shifting along onto the bladder itself as well. So I find that gut health is hugely important. There can also be microbes that will translocate. I remember listening to a talk with a urologist in it, and he was saying that for E. coli, you know, they were talking about translocation of microbes and how long it takes. You know, they're so small, surely it takes a very long time for a microbe to translocate from the anus to the vagina or to the bladder. And he said it's like going for a walk in the park for them. They can move quite quickly, actually, across this environment. And if there is large amounts of them, or the stool is staying in the colon for longer than we would deem perhaps normal, or I say normal, that there's more time for that bacteria to perhaps exit and move along. And then we start looking at the immune system. Why is the immune system allowing these bacteria to perhaps take up residence in areas that they're not meant to be in? But we also have bacteria in the vagina that we are meant to live with at normal levels, that perhaps has been allowed to grow to a larger amount, and that is causing problems, or that is then translocating to the bladder or the urethra and causing problems there, because it has come, the amount has grown, there's not enough of the beneficial bacteria to keep it in check, but also the immune system is not doing what it should be doing, which is setting up its, you know, defenses and keeping things you know, working in terms of keeping these things down and stopping the inflammation that can come with them.
That's a really, like, I didn't know about the walk in the park. It's a brilliant analogy, because everyone's talking about translocation, and we talk about hygiene in that instance, and, you know, types of the direction of cleaning, sort of from front to the bottom, not the reverse, if you like. But that's, I wanted to go a little bit here on one topic. I have attended a training with a gynecologist who is doing sort of operations in the abdomen, and she's doing like a lot of female related operations. And what she was saying, that you can always see the gut that's sort of inflamed, because this pro-inflammatory tissue is just sort of penetrating the whole area. And she said it's really literally you have to tear it off, this kind of inflamed tissue, to do operation. And this was like an eye-opening, because we see this from a different angle. We don't do these types of work. And I was just like, I knew that, oh yes, it's all penetrating, and the fascia and the, what something we call extracellular matrix is all together. And, you know, so basically the pro-inflammatory agents from the gut, especially if there's a situation of leaky gut, they first penetrate the area around where they are before they are picked up by systemic circulation. And this is where your female health basically is. So yes, I absolutely am with you with that. And I'd like to move a little bit to the gut area in terms of as a chef, you know, we all touch a little bit upon how you work with clients who come to you with gut health, or just your approach to sort of changing the gut health. And then second question, I'll ask it now, but let you kind of develop it, is that how do you talk about cooking?
Mm.
What do you say? Because like we say rainbow plate, and then the person is like, how do I get there? So what's your take on it?
So as a chef, obviously, I support my clients hugely in the kitchen with recipes and giving them explanations of how to get somewhere. But as I say, I run cooking courses as well. And I think this is hugely important, because if we can change our diet to reduce inflammation, reduce oxidation, work on our gut health, ensure that our detoxification pathways are optimal, if all of these things are functioning, quite a lot of people who are ill would not be ill. And therefore, their immune system is more primed to be able to fight off other infections and to keep things in balance. If you change your diet and it is optimal, and then you are still ill, this is when you should be seeking the support of healthcare practitioners and starting to look at supplementation and testing and all that side of it. But I think diet is the first place to go to, and it should be food first. You know, as nutritional therapists, when we are working with clients one-on-one, we quite often recommend supplements to try and bring them up to optimal levels. But it's very easy to reach for or to suggest a pill rather than actually just saying, do you know what, you need to shift your diet in a certain way first of all, and see if we can change the patterns via the food first of all. But if you are not digesting your food properly, if you're not absorbing your nutrients properly, this is the very first place to start. So I work a lot with clients from the top down in terms of their digestion, ensuring that they are chewing their food properly, they are not eating on the move, that they are sitting down when they're eating. If they are struggling with their digestion, looking at foods that have been cooked beforehand and slow cooked meals, where the fibers of the food have been broken down in the cooking process, so that the stomach doesn't have to work quite so hard on digesting the food. There's a really beautiful Chinese saying called the stomach has no teeth. Not called, sorry, but the saying is the stomach has no teeth. And you need to remember that, you know, if you don't chew your food properly first here, it's not going to get chewed anywhere else. It will get mushed and it will get smushed down there, but it's not going to get actually chewed. So if you're consuming foods that are already broken down a bit, soups, casseroles, things like that, where they've been long slow cooked, not so easy in the summer. We also need to eat with the seasons and listen to our bodies about what we want. You know, this roasting hot summer we've just had in the UK, I found myself really just craving the simplest salads, everything raw on my plate. And now we've had equinox, we're getting into autumn, and I'm craving soups and hearty dishes with lentils and, you know, things that have been long and slow cooked and broken down. And it's understanding as the seasons move what our body needs, I think, is really important as well. So I run this unique cooking course where it's not specifically around fertility, but as I say, it's around looking at making sure that you are eating to support your body. And we do that by looking at the science of nutrigenomics. So nutrigenomics is how food talks to your genes. So we all have a genetic makeup. And funnily enough, actually, we're all very, very similar in our genetic makeup. There are these things called SNPs on our genes, single nucleotide polymorphisms, that add a variant. So why one person may have blue eyes or another person has brown eyes, that is due to a SNP on their genetics, on their genes. The lady I work with is at the forefront of this. She is a nutrigenomicist. She's a dietitian of 25 years in America, and she's, you know, a world leader in this field. And she brings the science of how food talks to our genes. And then I translate that into the kitchen to make it simple. So something that sounds very complicated, and you can delve as much into the science in our course as you want to. She gives some beautiful instructions on the science and explains it very, very well. But then I translate that, I take the information we've been given and I explain how we can cook that in the kitchen, but then also how to make it delicious. You know, I do not want to eat some steamed, boring vegetables. I want to eat vegetables that have got flavor to them and have some excitingness to them. I'm always amazed when people say, oh, my child won't eat vegetables. And I'm like, well, what sort of veg do you give them? Oh, I give them steamed this and steamed that. And I'm like, add some flavor to it, you know, stick some soy sauce on there, roll it in some garlic that's been cooked in a little olive oil with a pinch of salt in there. You know, there has to be some flavor, because nobody wants to eat, well, some people like to eat very plain food, but most people, their brain, their taste buds, everything is excited by flavor and taste. And that's why we love sugar so much, because it's an excitatory. It's a, our taste buds are stimulated by sugar, and then our brain is stimulated by the sugar. So we need to switch that around and change it to flavor over just the sweet things. So, you know, in terms of a food for a healthy pregnancy, one of the things that we talk about a lot in our course, we'd have different sections. So inflammation, oxidation, hugely important that you do not have inflammation in the body, of which there can be lots without you realizing. Inflammation would be, you know, if you cut yourself and your finger becomes red, raised around that cut, that is inflammation. But we can also have that internally happening as well, and eating foods that reduce that chance of inflammation, that work on the genes that turn down the inflammatory response in the body, is hugely important. Oxidative stress, again, we have a section on that. But one of the most important ones is methylation. So methylation is about the methylation of two, well, it's about lots of things, but simply it's about two parts, folate, which is B9, and B12. And these are the two ones that are probably most talked about in terms of, particularly folate, in terms of fertility. And the reason that is that as they work within these, it's like lots of cogs that all roll together, and each cog has to be moving to move the next cog on. And they all pass their molecule, be it the folate, the B12, or whatever else has been, homocysteine is within there, and lots of other things, onto the next cycle for it to be able to move and work properly, and to keep all these cogs, all these roundabouts moving in tandem. They're sharing an atom. So the folate gets methylated, it's a methyl donor, and it passes it over to B12 so that that can be methylated. Then as it unmethylates itself, it transforms back, and it's the folate goes around, picks up another methyl donor, it comes around and methylates the B12. Folate is needed for DNA synthesis and repair. It's needed for red blood cell formation. All these things that are hugely important in the fertility journey of actually getting those cells to start dividing and to start replicating and creating the embryo. So it's really important that that cycle is working properly. Now, I know, you know, anyone who's on a fertility journey will have heard about folate or folic acid, because it's talked about hugely. It's in every single pregnancy supplement pretty much that's out there. But ensuring that you are doing it properly through your diet first is the most important part of it, because it's not just about the folate and the B12. All the other B vitamins are needed within this cycle as well. And when you look at whole foods, generally all the other vitamins come along with them as well. Now, if you are consuming all the foods that you should be to ensure that these cycles, these cogs are all working and whirring properly, and this is happening, you know, every second within your cells of every minute of the day and night, it's not something that just turns on occasionally or just turns on when you're trying to get pregnant. This is absolutely sort of, I think of methylation as being almost like the seat of our health after the gut, you know, what's going on with methylation, you know, energy production, it just goes on and on. The list is massive for where it works. You know, if you're eating all the right foods, then start looking at supplementation. And I think that's a really important part, is that people reach for the pill, the supplement first, without actually focusing in on the diet. So, you know, our course is structured to look at all these basis of how to support your health from an optimal level. And then beyond that, if you're still not right, that's when you then start looking for how can I increase this through external viewpoints.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, first of all, you've touched upon three really dear things to me. One is you've spoken about, well, let's do it from the back so that we cover everything you've mentioned. First of all, I am absolutely happy that we're on the same page, because I'm a nutrigenomics practitioner. I'm trained here in the UK. And as a part of fertility workup, because this podcast is ready to conceive, so somebody who's not had like an unhappy part of the fertility journey, I absolutely suggest they start with the food course, and we'll give some details that you provide. and they get more insights into their health. And, you know, like I had a friend of mine before I started doing this work. She went to a detox food program, which wasn't so much detox, it was more about cooking and food. And she said they were amazing recipes. And she said, and then I got pregnant. And I said, what did you eat? And she said, I ate green food every day. I made sure that I have green food, like it was smoothies or whatever, green, you know, spinach or whatever. And of course, green is one of the key sources of folate. So I was like, yep. And glutathione, like green as a color in food. And I was like, yep, absolutely. That's exactly how it works. So in her case, that was sufficient. And that's why this episode is about food largely. So, but with methylation, yes, when people come up for a fertility workup, one of the things that I strongly recommend, especially if time is running out, is doing a proper DNA testing for both female and male and see how much support do you actually need. And also thank you for talking about methylfolate, because most of the supplements, unfortunately, have still got folic acid. And as I am doing a mentorship program, well, I'm being mentored for the fertility work. And we had this discussion, and the owner of the program, she reached out to NHS people and asked, why are you still recommending folic acid? Because we know that in 52% of people, it's not being methylated properly. And they say, oh, we need a little bit more time to get a little bit more evidence to we understand, generally they say, but we need a little bit more time to move our internal cogs so that we can stop recommending it. So, well, this is where we come in place. We know the science now. We're telling you, do not buy unmethylated folic acid. It should be methylated. It's kind of prepared for you. And the other thing you mentioned, which is B12, again, when you're buying B12, check out that it is not cyanocobalamin, because B12 is cobalamin. It should be methylcobalamin, or the other one, which was I forgot, but not cyanocobalamin, because cyan is a cyanide, basically. So it's not the type of supplement you need. You need to have a bit more support with that. And so I'm absolutely happy, and I'd love to go through your course myself to get a bit more insights into how to cook. And, you know, the other thing I really enjoyed is that I know you're also like the aspect of cooking you do is a little bit TCM flavored. Yeah. I'd like to hear a bit more about that. And absolutely thank you for touching upon eating in seasons, because how do you feel about smoothie in winter? What's your take on that?
If you are somebody who is a very hot person, you stick your feet out of the cover at night, you have a red flush to your face or your chest, you know, you feel the heat, then smoothies, absolutely, go for it. if you are a cold person, your feet are always cold, you're wearing slippers all through winter, if you're like me, I'm like straight into sheepskin boots around about now. You know, a smoothie may potentially actually be quite cold energetically on your body. If you have a lot of digestive fire, then you may be able to cope with it. But if you, no matter whether you're a hot or cold person, you should always chew your smoothie, because you need to tell your stomach that it's coming. If you don't, so this is the cephalic stage of digestion, you should be able to smell your food first. It tells your brain food is coming. It activates the digestive enzymes in your mouth. Your mouth will start salivating, and that in turn is telling your stomach, okay, food is coming, digestive enzymes are being produced from the pancreas, you are starting to release bile, you're starting to increase the amount of stomach acid as it readies itself for food. Chewing is another way of telling your stomach that food is on its way down as well. If you're just slurping, the stomach sort of switches off. Oh, it's just water, it's just liquid. And then it gets this big glunk of whizzed up vegetables and fruits and whatever. And it can actually struggle quite a lot with it. If you feel like you have a smoothie and afterwards you're like, oh God, you know, I just feel a bit heavy in my stomach afterwards, it may be that you're not digesting it so well. In that case, juices are generally better because they're taking out the fiber. For juices, what I tend to do is I juice vegetables and then I blend them with some fruit so that there's a little bit of fiber in there. Because fruits, you don't need to take the fiber out of it generally. Mango, pineapple, things like that, they're great sources of fiber. The vegetables, the fiber is what makes them not so sweet. So you juice a carrot, you've got a very sweet liquid there. You eat a carrot raw, yeah, you can taste the sweetness, but it's not as sweet as when you drink the juice of it. So, you know, getting your vegetable parts into that, getting the vitamins and minerals and some of the bioactives from them. Bioactives are things that are not vitamins or minerals, but are still very important for our health, sulforaphane being one of them. It's a major antioxidant in the body and comes from cruciferous vegetables. So, you know, you can stick a cabbage leaf in there. You're not going to want to blend up and have in a smoothie a cabbage leaf, but some juice of the cabbage leaf is actually relatively tolerable, particularly if you mix it with other things as well. So with the TCM nutrition side of things, you know, I do try to look at energetics of the body. I don't do a huge amount of this. I do look at it from a very simplistic point of view. If somebody is struggling with their digestion, then yes, I look at what we call the spleen-friendly diet. So pre-digestive foods, ensuring they're chewing well. Again, the Chinese have these wonderful ways or TCM has this wonderful way of describing things. And they describe the stomach like a saucepan and the spleen like the fire. Now I take that the stomach is the saucepan, but the digestive juices are the fire. And we need to ensure that all of those are active, that the fire is going to be good enough to cook the food in the saucepan. So if you're eating lots of raw food, your stomach needs to be able to cook that raw food. It needs to be able to break it down to be able to get the nutrients out of it. So certainly kind of looking at energetics of food is really important. And you can do that quite simply. You can eat something like a radish, which is an amazing, wonderful cruciferous. It's also got quercetin in it as well, so great for lowering histamine in the body. But you can taste that it is both cooling, but there's a slight bitterness to it that will be quite stimulating for the body as well. It's actually sort of quite moving. So yes, it's cold, but it is moving, and you'll almost feel a sensation of it kind of moving downwards. Consume something like chili, and you will feel a heat, and you will feel that heat rising. So they have these different properties to them. And it's important to sort of understand that, because if you're somebody that is always very hot, always flushing in the face, chili actually might not be very good for you because you're forcing more heat upwards. You might need more cooling foods that are helping things to move downwards. They're stimulating and moving, but it's more of a downward sensation. Something like chicken or lentils are quite often quite bland, they're quite sort of nurturing, and they're very neutral. Something like, obviously like a satsuma or lemon is acidic, but it can also be quite cooling with that as well. So there's this sort of sharpness and lift, but it's quite a cooling property. Ginger is another very stimulating one, and it causes heat to rise. So it's just understanding these different sort of energetics within the foods. Some are quite odd, like trout is a very heating fish. Most other fish are quite cooling, but trout is quite stimulating and quite heating. So it's, and lamb is a very heating meat, whereas, as I said, you know, chicken is quite a neutral. So it's kind of understanding these little nuances of these foods to work within somebody's health and their body. But it's definitely not the first thing that I leap to, but it's always there in the back of my mind of how can I work with somebody from a food point of view to buffer what's going on for them and to give them foods that are going to be beneficial for the part of their body that is needing that, not just the nutrients but the energetics of that food as well. I'm not sure if I've explained that very well.
No, it does sound quite wholesome. Like, because I've, first of all, I just wanted to say for anyone who's like medically trained and listening to this or otherwise, spleen, when we talk about TCM spleen, it's not a physical organ of spleen that we mean. It's a bit more complicated story where they considered pancreas and spleen to be the organ. And it's a bit more like philosophical notion, if you like, rather than the actual. So we understand what spleen does in the body. It's just a slightly different concept here. No, I understand it quite a bit. And I think that in a sense, you know, we need to adapt, if you like. I'm trained in TCM. I'm trained in a sort of in five element system. And I use it a lot as part of my work and as part of emotional coachings that I do and other type of work. But I also think it's about, when I started learning more and more, I've understood that TCM, or in my case, the five element, is not like unanimous, sort of monolithic kind of article, if you like. It had schools all throughout the development, and each person who was running the school, he would add in his lifetime, he would add a little bit more knowledge and he'll record it. And that's the benefit of probably what Chinese have, this kind of complex system has as compared to everyone else. The lineage is never broke. They always carried on. While we had a lot of, like, we in the West or we elsewhere in the world, we had like a lot of cuts and brokerages in the lineages. So it's very difficult to pick up tradition. For example, there is Western energetic tradition, which is used in herbal medicine. But again, it still needs to be picked up and patched together, while Chinese has never stopped. And this is where you get this wisdom. And I believe that, as you were saying, like this kind of, oh, this is bland and this is nourishing. If somebody's interested, this is really like, it will be a pastime forever. If you will need no other hobby if you start reading this. Anyway, so look, I think we need to sort of start wrapping up because I always love talking to you. And I think I should invite you again to talk more about vaginal microbiome and that area, because it's another like a massive topic we didn't speak a lot about. So how do you work with people? What do you do? How people can find you? So I understand there's a course and we will give details. I think it's a waiting list now, isn't it? From the next.
Yeah, we're running a live course now. So we run it roughly once or twice a year. And the reason for that being is so that we can have Q&A sessions and the odd live cooking demo session as well. So we can really get to know our students as well, because we love conversing with them, but there's a space for them to come and actually ask questions. It's so important when you're learning in the kitchen, like, you know, you try and cook something and it doesn't work out quite right. Well, why, you know, throw that into the Q&A session. Mm-hmm. Or trying to understand something about the science. We do a cook along as well about flavor fundamentals. So I actually teach people how to understand taste whilst making a couple of salsas, because it's, you know, you've got sharp and salty and all sorts of different elements coming through to that. So you can find that on my website, which is katewaters.co.uk. And then it's under education, and it's the Genius cooking course for the public at the moment. We will be doing something for practitioners next year. We do have practitioners on our courses at the moment, but we're going to try and do one that's geared a little bit more towards practitioners with slightly more in-depth science as well. We've slightly stepped back with the science a little bit to make it more understandable for the public. But it's still it's a fantastic course, and it's a huge amount of information. There's 8 modules, but within them, I think there's something like 21 different sections in the cooking department. There's an entire culinary library of basics. Amanda does a lot of talking and explaining about nutrigenomics as a fundamental, understanding the science behind it. And then she goes into the science of all the different modules for inflammation, oxidation, etc. So you can find me through my website, so katewaters.co.uk. You can contact me through there. I work with clients one-on-one. I work in a minimum, I work with people is generally a 3-month program. I do occasionally do just vaginal microbiome explanations, but I find that it's better if you have a problem that you actually work with me for a longer period of time, because it takes 3 months to at least start to see some sort of changes. I work with people very closely. I see them weekly for the first month and then every other week for the second 2 months. And that way we can keep tweaking and working on what's working, taking out things that are not working or that maybe are not giving you the benefit that you want to see, but also slowly layering the information of both food and lifestyle advice as well, so that it's not all given in one massive lump where you are then overwhelmed. It's very small, gradual steps. And because I work with quite a lot of people who are very overwhelmed, both from their pain, their condition. I have a few clients at the moment who have a huge amount of fatigue with their condition as well, and have been quite bedbound for a while. So we're very slowly, little steps. And even the people who are, you know, still working and running a household, busy household with children and have had years of health problems, there's still this gentle layering that happens each week that seems to be really beneficial for them to unpick what's going on for them, find the root cause, or at least to reduce the symptoms down enough that they can start to feel more manageable and more comfortable with themselves. So I work with practitioners as well. I also offer mentoring sessions. So if a practitioner has a case that is related to the bladder or vagina and they are unsure about what they're doing with it, but they don't want to refer on because be it a fertility case or, you know, they're 5 months into the gut health part of it, then I offer mentoring, and I am just sorting my website out at the moment for that. So it's slowly coming, but you can contact me again through my website for that.
Well, that's amazing. Well, I can endorse Kate because we both share a mentor in vaginal health work, which is Moira, who's a very complicated name.
Bradfield. Yes. Bradfield, I think it's for that. Yes.
Moira is a world-class leader in that area, and she's in Australia, but she refers her clients to Kate. So this is, you know, Kate is our go-to expert in this area in this country, and I hope she carries this badge proudly among other ones. So yes, and thank you very much. It's amazing. I hope this information will help the listeners to get their head around and sort of get in the frame mindset, if you like, about what it takes to get ready to conceive. Thank you very much. To comment under this episode, will go onto your usual podcast platforms and will be on YouTube. So do comment every questions. I'll pass them on to Kate. And yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, we're stopping.